Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord continued, one who is not in proper knowledge thinks that demigods like Brahma and Shiva are independent, or he even thinks that the living entities are independent. Purport, the living entities including Brahma are not independently separated but are counted within the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord being the super soul in every living entity, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, is directing everyone in the activities of the material modes of nature. No one can act independently of the sanction of the Lord, and therefore, indirectly, no one is different from the Supreme Person. Certainly not Brahma and Rudra, who are incarnations of the material modes, material nature's modes of passion and ignorance. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यामनोऽभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदिनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे सो टुडे वी आर डिस्कसिंग टेक्स्ट 52 जस्ट टू सेट अ लिटिल बिट ऑफ कॉन्टेक्स्ट इन दिस पर्टिकुलर सो दक्षा हैड ऑफेंडेड लॉर्ड शिवा एंड आफ्टर लॉर्ड शिवा लीव्स द सैक्रिफाइस demigods, realizing that a very great personality like Lord Shiva has been offended, they actually go to Mount Kailash to appease Lord Shiva. So in the beginning of the chapter and in the previous chapter, we hear some of the prayers which Lord Brahma and all the other demigods offer to Lord Shiva. They actually mention, they recognize the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and they recognize what a big mistake was done in that sacrifice which was being performed by Daksha. The name of Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. Ashutosh means one who gets quickly appeased. It's very easy to please Lord Shiva. He doesn't hold his anger for long. So he gets very quickly appeased by the prayers, sincere prayers of Brahma and all the other demigods. And then he gives mitigation for whatever had happened, the after effects of the war that had happened over there. So there were lots of people, some people had lost their teeth, some had lost their eyes, like it is described, because somebody showed their teeth and laughed when Lord Shiva was being insulted, that person had lost their teeth. So in this way, lots of people had lost many of their possessions, their bodily possessions. So Lord Shiva actually gives a benediction that this person will get this back, this person will get this back. He's pleased and now he's trying to amend the situation. And then he comes to Daksha, who was the main offender in that yagya. And he says that Daksha will have to have the head of a goat. So after appeasing Lord Shiva, all the demigods again start the sacrifice. And then the sacrificial animal, it is mentioned in the previous verses, that the sacrificial animal which was going to be sacrificed, its head is then attached to Daksha. So that is how Daksha comes back to life, with the head of a goat. And as soon as he comes back to life, Daksha takes darshan of Lord Shiva. And he remembers what offenses he had done and why he got this position of having the head of a goat. So it said that his heart had become completely purified of all the contamination that was there in his heart. So he becomes a bit pacified, his mind is a bit peaceful and he's able to think clearly because his heart is purified now. And realizing the mistake that he had done, he goes and offers obeisances to Lord Shiva and he seeks forgiveness. So this whole pastime, this whole Daksha Yagya pastime, one of the main lessons that we learn from this pastime is how not to offend devotees. That is one of the main lessons we learn. Even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world, he used to call this Vaishnava Aparadha as the Hathi Mata offense. So Lord Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can tolerate any offense which is committed to them, but they cannot tolerate any offense which is committed to their devotees. And this has been reiterated in the Bhagavatam once, you know, again and again this point is reiterated, how one should not offend the Lord's devotees. Because like the Lord says during the Amrish Maharaj pastime, when Durvasa Muni goes to seek forgiveness from Amrish Maharaj, even in that pastime we see how the Lord is Bhakta Vatsala, he is very protective of his devotees. And Durvasa Muni had unnecessarily offended a faultless devotee of the Lord. So then the whole thing is there how Sudarshan Chakra is following Durvasa Muni and he goes to Lord Krishna Vishnu to seek forgiveness and to seek some solution to this blazing fire of Sudarshan Chakra. And at that time Lord Vishnu says the famous verse. He says that I am in the heart of devotees, but the devotees are always in my heart as well. So any offense that is committed to me, I can tolerate, I will pardon if someone commits an offense to me. But any offense committed at the lotus feet of my devotee, I will never give forgiveness for that. Unless the person who has offended the devotee goes and seeks pardon from the devotee himself. So Vishnu did not help Durvasa Muni in that situation. He actually sent Durvasa Muni back to Amrish Maharaj to seek forgiveness. So even here we see, you know, we are talking about the offense created, done by a Vaishnava. So it's very important lesson that this whole pastime is teaching us, that how Krishna or Vishnu does not tolerate any offenses committed to his devotees. And therefore Daksha had to suffer such a big setback. He has the head of a goat. Imagine, he is the Prajapati, he is the progenitor of this whole universe. So many generations and generations of, you know, big kings and stalwart kings have come from Daksha Prajapati. But he has the head of a goat. What can be a more shameful situation than that? But he had to undergo that penance, or he had to accept that punishment, because he had offended one of the greatest devotees of the Lord, Lord Shiva. So this whole pastime is teaching us that lesson. The pastime is also teaching us one more lesson, how not to judge someone externally. Now Daksha had committed this offense only because of his external judgment of Lord Shiva. We all know how Lord Shiva dresses. Lord Shiva actually is completely devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is completely detached. He has no material possessions and he is not attached to anything of this world. And therefore if we see, which is evident from his dress, we see whenever we see a photo of Lord Shiva, we see how he is dressed. He has just a deer skin around his waist. He just has some Rudraksh Mala, one Kamandalu. And he has his japa beads. And maybe, you know, he has some snakes around him, which he got from the crematorium, and some skull and some ashes. So this is Lord Shiva's dress. And Daksha, who was, you know, a great Prajapati, he was at the helm of affairs. He had great opulence at his disposal. So he sees Lord Shiva like this and he judges him by his external appearance. And he thinks that Lord Shiva is a lowly person. Because he is, you know, associating with bhutas and ghosts and all these lowly creatures who roam around in the world or who are found in crematoriums. So he judges Lord Shiva by his external appearance and he creates the offense of then making his actions based on Lord Shiva's appearance. Basing his actions on Lord Shiva's appearance, because of which he goes completely wrong in his judgment and he creates one of the biggest Vaishnava aparadha of the Bhagavatam. So these are two important lessons which this pastime teaches us. How Vaishnava aparadha is absolutely not tolerated by the Lord. He calls it as the Hatimata offense. Carefully garden, you know, carefully created garden of devotion which we cultivate in our heart can get completely destroyed by the offense of Vaishnava or creating offense to Vaishnavas. And the second lesson which it teaches us is how not to judge devotees externally. So then Daksha realizes his mistake. With that goat head, he offers obeisances to Lord Shiva. He seeks pardon from Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, being very merciful, he completely forgives Daksha for his offense. And then the yajna is performed very nicely. Now we have to remember, Daksha is actually a servant of the Lord. He is an empowered servant of the Lord. Just like Indra. Indra is also an empowered servant of the Lord, but sometimes he makes mistakes. He does not realize his position. He forgets his position and he offends the Lord or his devotees. So in the same way, Daksha is also an empowered servant of the Lord. It's just that he made this mistake. But that does not mean the Lord does not forgive once he had sought pardon from Lord Shiva. The Lord personally appeared in the sacrifice which Daksha was conducting. And a few verses ago, the Lord has appeared to give his personal darshan. So that shows that, you know, Daksha was not any ordinary person. Otherwise, why the Lord would appear in such a person's sacrifice? So the Lord was happy and therefore he came, appeared personally to accept the oblations which were offered in the fire. And some verses ago, as soon as the Lord appeared, everyone started offering prayers to the Lord. And there are very beautiful prayers which are described in this section. Prayers which were offered by Shiva, by Brahma, by all the other demigods. Everybody offers prayers to Lord Vishnu. And maybe two or three verses ago, the Lord has now started speaking. So this is one of the verses which Lord is speaking. And once the Lord finishes speaking, it will conclude the sacrifice which the Daksha was performing. Because the Lord was very happy, he appeared, he accepts the oblations, he goes back. And that is the ultimate goal of any sacrifice, this is for which is performed, and then this whole pastime will come to an end with the end of this chapter. So the whole pastime of Daksha Yagya is now coming to an end, and then the next chapter, from chapter 8, we will start the pastime of Dhru Maharaj, which is again one of the very illustrious pastimes of the Bhagavatam. Now coming to this verse, in this verse the Lord is making very clear the position of his own position and the position of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So the Lord is saying over here that one who is not in proper knowledge thinks that the demigods like Lord Brahma and Shiva are independent. Now this rings a bell. So in the Bhagavad Gita, again in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in verse 20, a similar verse is spoken by Lord Krishna. So Lord Krishna, that verse goes as Kame Sterte Ritagyana. What does that verse mean? That verse means that those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires, by too many attachments, they are attached to material things, they are attached to their material desires being fulfilled, and because of which their intelligence is stolen. And because their intelligence is stolen, they do not discriminate who is the Supreme Lord and who are the demigods. And they actually worship the demigods just for the fulfillment of those material desires. So Lord Krishna is making very clear over there. And in that section also, in the previous verse, in Bhagavad Gita 7.19, Lord Krishna says the famous verse, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. He talks about that verse, that one, it is very durlabh, it is very rare to find a Mahatma who understands the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And immediately he follows it by this particular verse, that kame sethe rita jnana. So he says that after millions and millions of births, one can come to the understanding that I am the Supreme Lord. But such mahatmas are very durlabh, they are very rare. And then he says, however, people whose intelligence is stolen because of material desires and material attachments, they worship the demigods for the fulfillment of their material desires. So Prabhupada elaborates in that purport. Prabhupada says that, and because in the further verses also Lord Krishna says, he says that however, they may worship these demigods for the fulfillment of their desires, but it is I seated in their heart and who give them this proclivity to worship the demigods. And I seated in the demigods' hearts also fulfill the desires which these people are asking. So Lord Krishna is facilitating both ways. People who are attached to demigod worship, Lord Krishna is actually encouraging them to go in that direction. And people who want material desires from demigods, again, Lord Krishna is there as the super soul in the demigod's heart. And he is actually arranging for the demigods as the super soul to satisfy the desires of all these people who are attached to get benedictions from the demigods. So same way we are seeing over here. And in that purport, Prabhupada explains. Prabhupada says that Krishna is actually ultimately trying to establish the fact that, you know, whether you have material desires, we know the famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajjeta purusham param. So whether you are akama, completely free of material desires, sarva kama, having lots of material desires, moksha kama, you are desiring liberation. So whatever you desire, please worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada elaborates that in that section of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says that even if you have desires, and you know all of us are living in this material world, we are practicing devotees of the Lord. We are not desireless, or our desires are not all for the Supreme Personality of Godhead or for the satisfaction of His lotus feet or of His devotees. We might have desires which might pop up in our heart. But even for the satisfaction of that, those desires, Prabhupada is saying, and the Bhagavatam is saying, then don't go to the demigods for the satisfaction of desires. Continue worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is like the loving Father, who might satisfy the desire if it's good for you, but if it's not good for you, He will not give you that desire. He will not be like the demigods who are compared to shopkeepers, Prabhupada says, whom you give some oblation or you give some worship or some puja, like we pay a shopkeeper. So they are obliged to then give that desire to you. That is the difference Prabhupada brings out in that particular section of Bhagavad Gita. And even here, Prabhupada says that people who do not realize the position of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and they think that they are all equal, Brahma and Shiva are equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are actually people who are not of higher intelligence. He says that Brahma and Shiva are separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord who have actually taken that position because they have been given the service of the material, being in charge of the material mode of passion and ignorance. That is what Prabhupada is saying over here. So Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, Brahma is actually a Jiva Tattva only. Lord Shiva has his own position. There is a unique position which Shiva has, which is called as Shiva Tattva. We will not go into that, elaborate into that philosophy. But Brahma is a Jiva Tattva. Somebody who does lots and lots of penances and who leads, you know, sinless lives for many, many lifetimes can actually get the position of Lord Brahma. But Lord Shiva's position is eternal. Nobody can get that position because he has an eternal position even in the spiritual world as Sadashiva, where he is always worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the difference which Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu is mentioning in the sacrifice of Daksha. And he is bringing out that position of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva in this particular verse. And today it is the disappearance day of Ishwarapuri. I can see Mahatma Prabhu smiling. So we will spend the next few minutes describing some of the pastimes of Ishwarapuri. And there is a very beautiful connection between this verse and what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking when before the pastimes of Ishwarapuri started in his particular life. So in a few days' time, we are going to celebrate the Gaur Purnima festival. It's, you know, hardly 2 weeks away, the most important festival for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. In fact, that festival is more important to us even than Janmashtami. Because we wouldn't have known about Lord Krishna if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not appeared 500 years ago and taught us all devotional service to Lord Krishna. So for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Gaur Purnima is, you know, much, much more important, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to spread the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in this world. So what better way to celebrate Gaur Purnima than to first discuss about his guru, Ishwarapuri. So today we have an opportunity to discuss some of the pastimes of Sri Ishwarapuri, who was the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an incarnation of the Supreme. He is the Supreme Lord himself. He is considered an avatari. So he is non-different than Lord Krishna. And the purpose of his appearance in this world was to enact the pastimes as the devotee of Lord Krishna. And he came to actually teach all of us. He actually broke open the trunk or the treasure house of love of Lord Krishna. And he freely distributed love of Krishna along with his brother Nityanand Prabhu to everybody. So we see that he came to teach us devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna. He came to spread the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is the means to achieve love of Godhead. He himself came to preach all this, but in his young days, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not practice this himself. In his young days as Nimai Pandit, in fact, he was quite the opposite of what he had come to preach. He had absolutely no, he showed no interest or inclination to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All his youth, his young days and his youth were spent in just grammar and becoming a Pandita. And therefore he was famous in Nadia as Nimai Pandit. So all day and night he used to just focus on studying the scriptures from the point of view of not developing devotion to Krishna, but from the point of view of becoming a great Pandit of the Shastras and, you know, having an authority on grammar and different aspects of the Shastras. So no such pastimes were done by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which gave even an inkling that he is a great devotee and he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And why was that the situation? Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not exhibit any pastimes of devotion to Lord Krishna? So it is explained by our senior devotees and also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he did not display any pastimes from his youth itself, because he wanted to increase the hankering of the devotees. He wanted to increase the love in the devotees' heart. Because when devotees used to see, there were very handful of devotees in Nadia at that time. Nadia was considered the seat of grammar. It was considered the seat of learning. People who were, you know, knowledgeable in scriptures, they all used to come to Nadia, because it was considered that hub where learning of scriptures used to happen, and Shastras, people used to become great scholars and pundits. So lots of people used to assemble there. But the purpose was only to get expertise in the Shastras. The purpose was not to develop devotion. But there were a few handful of devotees who were living in Nadia at that time. And when they used to see Nimai Pandit, they used to feel the same love in their heart which they would feel when they would see Krishna. And they were not able to explain that why they are feeling so much love, so much devotion when they see this boy. So they were very eager to see that boy, Nimai Pandit, because they used to feel so much love and devotion for him. But they were not eager to hear him. Whenever they used to meet Nimai Pandit, Nimai Pandit would start engaging them in some debate on the Shastras. He would start, you know, trying to pull them into some vad vivad. We say vad vivad means, you know, unnecessarily debate on some aspect of the Shastra, which point is grammatically correct, which point is not correct. And for devotees, that is like poison to the ears. Because pure devotees, which were living in Nadia at that time, for them to hear anything apart from Krishna Katha is absolutely waste of time. They did not like to engage in all these mundane talks about grammar, how to become a scholar and all that. They were not interested in all that. So whenever Nimai Pandit used to pull them in these conversations, they would just feel like running away from there. So they were always caught in that dilemma. They were very attracted to him. And they could not explain why they were attracted to him, because Nimai Pandit had not displayed any pastimes yet. But at the same time, they would feel like running away because he would just discuss mundane grammar topics with them. So one day when Nimai Pandit was walking, and he had lots of disciples by then, so he had a school that he was running, and many people used to come to study the scriptures under him. So one day when Nimai Pandit was walking on the street, there was a devotee who was passing by from there. His name was Mukunda. And as soon as Mukunda saw Nimai Pandit walking, he changed his path and he went from the other side. And Nimai Pandit saw this, so he started discussing with his disciples. He said that why did that person change his path and go away when he saw us approaching? And then he only explained, he said, I know why. Because these are devotees of the Lord and they do not want to involve conversation through pastimes. I am going to display that I am the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna and that I am also non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when they see this transformation in me, not only all these devotees of Nadia or of Bharatvarsha, but even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva will come to worship my lotus feet. So I found this beautiful connection when we are reading this verse about Brahma and Shiva, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically mentions their names during this pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that one day I will display those pastimes which will bring Brahma and Shiva down to worship my lotus feet. So after that, but how did this great transformation take place then? How did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? When did he start displaying these pastimes? And for that we will go a little bit in the pastime of Ishwarapuri and why this transformation came through his guru, the great Ishwarapuri. So Ishwarapuri, it is mentioned by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that Madhavendrapuri, who was the guru of Ishwarapuri, is considered the sprout of the desire tree of devotion. So just a sprout which has come out, like if we put some seeds in the soil, we see first the little sprout comes out. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that Madhavendrapuri is that sprout of the love of devotion of Lord Krishna. And then he says that in Ishwarapuri, that sprout became the sapling of the love of devotion of Lord Krishna, of service to Guru and Krishna. And then after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, and that sapling in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became the trunk of an enormous tree. And that enormous tree was the desire tree of devotion to Lord Krishna. So not only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was converted that sapling into a trunk, but he was also the gardener himself, who then distributed this, you know, the fruits of this tree to everybody else. So Madhavendrapuri was the sprout, Ishwarapuri was the sapling, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became the trunk, the enormous trunk of the desire tree of devotion. So during his travels, Ishwarapuri actually comes once to Nadia. He comes to the town of Nadia. Now Ishwarapuri always kept himself incognito. So looking at his external appearance, nobody could tell that he was a great Vaishnava sannyasi. And somebody would just take him to be a Mayavadi or sannyasi, or maybe like a beggar who was just going around, you know, begging alms or something like that. So he used to always keep himself incognito. And he came to this great town of Nadia. And he lived, Gopinath Acharya gave him shelter in his house. So he started living in the house of Gopinath Acharya. And one day he came to the house of Advaita Acharya. Now Advaita Acharya is also a disciple of Madhavendrapuri. So actually Advaita Acharya and Ishwarapuri are god brothers. So he came to the house of Advaita Acharya and he just sat down in the corner. And at that time Advaita Acharya was worshipping his deities, his Shaligram Shila and his deities, Advaita Acharya was worshipping. And as soon as Ishwarapuri came there, he looked in his direction. And he felt that this does not look like an ordinary Mayavadi sannyasi or like a beggar who's a sadhu who's just going around begging for alms. He looks like an exalted Vaishnava sannyasi. But he could not ascertain that. So he continued his worship. But you know, he could see that effulgence coming out of Ishwarapuri. And then Mukunda Sarkar was also present over there at that time. So Mukunda Sarkar wanted Ishwarapuri to reveal his true identity at that time. So Mukunda Sarkar started discussing some Krishna Katha. He started singing some songs glorifying the Lord and he started discussing Krishna Katha. And as soon as Ishwarapuri heard this from the mouth of Mukunda Sarkar, who is another pure devotee, immediately tears of ecstasy started flowing from his eyes. He started rolling in the ground. The whole ground became wet because of the tears that were flowing from his eyes. And then Advaita Acharya realized that this is a great Vaishnava sannyasi. So he lifted him and he embraced him. And the way Advaita Acharya embraced Ishwarapuri, all the other devotees who were also present there, realize that this is none other than the great Ishwara Puri, the dearmost disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So Advaita Acharya and Ishwara Puri embraced each other for a long time. And then Advaita Acharya made him sit down and they lovingly exchanged talks about Madhavendra Puri and also talks about Krishna Katha. So after that, while he was staying over there, Ishwara Puri came to meet the great Nimai Pandit. So he was walking down and Nimai Pandit was returning from his school along with some of his disciples. And same like other devotees would experience. Even when Ishwara Puri saw this Nimai Pandit, he started experiencing the same devotion in his heart which he would normally experience for Lord Krishna. So he got very attracted to him and he went to him and he asked him. He said that, "Oh little boy, who are you? There is such tejas that is there in your face and I'm feeling so much prema when I look at you. So who are you?" And Nimai Pandit's disciples answered. They said that, "Oh, he's the great Nimai Pandit. He's one of the greatest scholars who is present in Nadia today." So that is the type of introduction they gave to Ishwara Puri. And Ishwara Puri immediately said, because he had heard of the glories of Nimai Pandit. So he immediately said, "Oh, you are the great Nimai Pandit." And Nimai Pandit humbly bowed down his head. Because he realized that this is a great personality. So this time Nimai Pandit did not engage in any mundane talks about scriptures or any grammatical talks about scriptures. He immediately bowed down at the lotus feet of Ishwara Puri. And he said that, "I would like to invite you to my house for prasadam. You are a great personality who has graced Nadia with your presence. So please come to my house for prasadam and I would like to have that honor of serving you lunch prasadam at my house." So he lovingly takes Ishwara Puri to his house and he makes him sit down. He washes the lotus feet of Ishwara Puri and he sprinkles it over his head and the head of his mother and all the disciples who were present over there. And after worshipping him very nicely, he makes him sit down and he lovingly serves him the lunch prasad which Sachi Mata had cooked. And in this way, he was showing an example that even though he was Nimai Pandit still at that time, he was that great scholar, he realized the exalted position and he realized that this is going to be his future guru. So he did not do any, you know, vad vivad or something like that with him. Very reverentially he worshipped his lotus feet and he served him lunch prasadam. So Ishwara Puri continued his stay in Nadia and he became very fond of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit was also a very little boy at that time. And seeing the devotion of Gadadhar Pandit, Ishwara Puri used to make him sit down in the house of Gopinath Acharya. And he used to tell him lots and lots of pastimes from a manuscript that he had personally written, which was called as Krishna Leelamrita. So this was written by Ishwara Puri and he used to tell all the pastimes to Gadadhar Pandit from this manuscript. And one day when he saw Nimai Pandit, he actually spoke to Nimai Pandit and he told Nimai Pandit that, "I have composed this great manuscript and can you please edit this manuscript for me? Because I heard that you are a great scholar, so can you please see if there is any grammatical errors that I might have made in this manuscript or if there is anything which I have left out in this manuscript?" Now normally Nimai Pandit, you know the nature that he had at that time, he had not yet manifested his pastimes as a devotee. So he would actually gladly agree and he would then point out lots of faults. "See, this is grammatically incorrect, this is this, this is this." He would normally do that. But with Ishwara Puri, he did not do that. And when there is a very famous verse which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke at that time, which is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said that whatever a devotee speaks is dictated by Lord Krishna himself. If anyone tries to find a fault in something that a devotee has spoken or written, then that person is nothing but a sinful wretch. So anyone who tries to find a fault in something that has been composed by a great devotee of the Lord, because it is Krishna who himself is dictating. So if somebody tries to find a fault in that composition, he is nothing but a sinful wretch. He is no lesser than greater than a wretch. And he says that even that, you know, like Prabhupada, there is a famous verse in Bhagavatam also, that any scriptures which are glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though they might be full of grammatical errors, they are still considered to be perfect. But literatures which are mundane literatures, which are composed in glorification of mundane personalities or mundane topics, even though they may be perfectly composed, they are like a place of a pilgrimage for crows. Bhagavatam says this verse. Bhagavatam says that, and Prabhupada, in that particular purport, Prabhupada actually says, he talks about himself. Prabhupada says that, I am writing all these books. And Prabhupada says that English is not my main language. So I am writing all these books and there might be so many errors, grammatical errors that might be there in my composition. But I am very confident that still these compositions will be found suitable by everyone who reads them. And it is only because Krishna is writing through me. Krishna is dictating. And the same way Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling Ishwarapuri. He is saying that whatever a devotee speaks or composes is dictated by Krishna himself. How can there be a fault in such a composition? And he says that Krishna, what does Krishna look at? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is continuing to tell Ishwarapuri. He is saying that Krishna is looking at the mood in which that offering has been done. He is not looking at the perfection, grammatical perfection with which that offering has been done. So, O great Ishwarapuri, who am I to find any faults in this manuscript? This manuscript is already perfect because it has been composed by your lotus hands and it has come out of your lotus mouth. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu complete, like Nimai Pandit declined to even look at that manuscript from an editing point of view. So after that, Ishwarapuri leaves Nadia and goes away, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decides to wind up his pastimes as Nimai Pandit, and he decides to start manifesting his pastimes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a devotee of the Lord and as the Supreme Personality of Lord Godhead himself. So he goes to Gaya. His father had left the world, and he actually goes to Gaya to offer Pinda to the forefathers. Gaya is famous for that. So he goes there, he offers the Pinda to his forefathers. And then he comes to the temple where the lotus footprint of Lord Vishnu is worshipped. And over there, when he comes to that temple, he hears lots of Brahmins chanting verses in glorification of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Those Brahmins who were present over there, they were Vaishnava Brahmins. And they were glorifying how the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu are the boat by which one can cross the material existence. These are the lotus feet which, you know, devotees of the Lord surrender to. And they always aspire to serve. So in this way, the Brahmins were glorifying the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, his footprints which were there. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard all these narrations, he actually went into ecstasy and he fainted. And tears of love were flowing from his eyes. And Chandrasekhar Acharya was present at that time over there. And he witnessed this transformation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Ishwarapuri happens to come over there. So he hears from Chandrasekhar Acharya what had happened, how this transformation had taken place. So very lovingly he lifts up Nimai Pandit and he embraces him. And when Nimai Pandit sees Ishwarapuri, he immediately offers obeisances at the lotus feet of Ishwarapuri. So this was now the second meeting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already met Ishwarapuri in Nadia and now he is meeting him for the second time in Gaya. And over there he actually tells him, he says that somebody comes to Gaya to offer a pinda for their forefathers. So he said that my trip to Gaya has been completely successful because I have come here to offer pinda to my forefathers and that way my forefathers get delivered. But simply by seeing you and taking darshan of your lotus feet, tens of millions of forefathers get liberated. Your darshan is much more powerful than offering pinda. So just by taking your darshan, tens of millions of my forefathers have got liberated. Your presence is even more auspicious than this whole holy tirtha of Gaya. And all holy tirthas pray for the dust of your lotus feet. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is corroborating the verse which Yudhishthir Maharaj speaks in the Bhagavatam. When Vibhishan has travelled, or the war of Mahabharata is over, and Vibhishan, after his travels, we know the pastime how Vibhishan did not take part in the war. He just goes away. Duryodhan drives him out. So he goes away on a pilgrimage. And after the war is over, after travelling on his pilgrimage, Vibhishan has come back to meet Yudhishthir and also to deliver Dhritarashtra. So that time Yudhishthir Maharaj welcomes Vibhishan. And there's a famous verse in the Bhagavatam where Yudhishthir Maharaj is saying that, O great personality, all the holy places are present in you. Wherever your personality is like you travel, you take the holy place within your heart. So So as soon as you have come here, the holy place, all the holy places have manifested in my palace because you are carrying the holy place in your heart. And same thing we are seeing over here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu telling Ishwarapuri that all holy tirthas pray for the dust of your feet. And O great Ishwarapuri, I am also praying at your lotus feet to ferry me across this ocean of material existence so that I can drink the nectar of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So I'm offering these prayers at your lotus feet. Please ferry me across this material existence and deliver me to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And hearing these beautiful prayers which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu composed for Ishwarapuri, Ishwarapuri just embraced him with love. And Ishwarapuri told him, he said that, O Nimai Pandit, I have come to know what your true position is. Today in the morning, I had an auspicious dream where I actually came to know that you are not that scholar Nimai Pandit whom I met in Nadia. You are actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. You are non-different from Lord Krishna. And it is my great fortune that I have been able to get your darshan. And Nimai Pandit just gently bows down his head, humbly bows down his head, and he just falls at the feet of Ishwarapuri. And next day, he goes to the house of Ishwarapuri. And then the famous pastime happens, where Nimai Pandit asks him for initiation. So he says that, great Ishwarapuri, I have now come to surrender my life at your lotus feet. Please initiate me with the mantra so that I can now dance in ecstasy with love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some love for Lord Krishna develops in my heart. So please give that mantra to me. And when he's approached like this, Ishwarapuri tells him, he says that you are the Supreme Lord. I've already realized that through the dream. So what to give of mantra? What to speak of mantra? I'm actually ready to give you my life as well. So if this is your desire that in this lifetime I accept this service of becoming your guru, I am happy to accept this service. And then Ishwarapuri initiates him into the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So he initiates him into that mantra. And we know that pastime that happens. That as soon as he initiates him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes into ecstasy. And like a madman through the streets of Gaya, he starts chanting and dancing. And like a madman, he is just glorifying the Supreme Lord and continuously singing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he actually comes and talks to Ishwarapuri. He says that, what is this mantra that you have given me? I have completely forgotten all my scholarly intelligence that I had. But like a madman, I'm just dancing. I'm not able to control myself. Tears are simply flowing from my eyes and I cannot stop chanting this mantra. What is this mantra that you've given me? And Ishwarapuri then tells him that this is the great Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And you just simply chant and dance this mantra and that will fulfill the mission that you have come for in this material world. So this is the exchange that happens between them. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continues to stay in Gaya for some time. So after a few days, Ishwarapuri visits Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this was like an unexpected visit. He had not told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I'm going to visit you. And he visits him just around lunchtime. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has just finished cooking his meal, his afternoon meal. So as soon as Ishwarapuri arrives, Ishwarapuri says in a joking mood, he says that, ha, look at what an appropriate time I have arrived. Lunch is just ready, so I'm sure I'm going to get a good feast from you. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very lovingly welcomes Ishwarapuri. And he says, yes, Guru Maharaj, you have arrived at the right time. Please sit down and let me serve this food which I have cooked for you, for your pleasure. And Ishwarapuri then, says, no, I was just joking. You have just cooked enough for one person. I cannot accept this food from you. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu insists. He says that, when will I get this fortune of serving you with my own hands? When will I get this fortune of offering prasad to you? I will cook for myself later. It doesn't matter at all. But you please sit down and let me serve you this prasad. And then whole exchange is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very lovingly serves his guru. He very lovingly serves all the prasad. He keeps bringing preparation after preparation. And very lovingly he serves his guru. Very forcibly he makes him eat whatever he has cooked. So through these interactions, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually trying to teach us that even though he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nobody can be beyond serving their Guru. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to establish to us. That service to Guru is of the primemost importance, more importance than service to the Lord, to the deities themselves. And he himself showed this example by serving his Guru very nicely. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu leaves Gaya, and on his way to back to Nadia, he goes via Kumarhatta. Kumarhatta is the birthplace of Ishwarapuri. So he wanted to take darshan of the birthplace of Ishwarapuri and the house where Ishwarapuri was born. He wanted to pay obeisances and take the dust from that place. And then he wanted to go to Nadia. So on the way he stops over there in Kumarhatta, and with great love and reverence he rolls in the dust of Kumarhatta, especially in the courtyard of the house of Ishwarapuri. And then he takes some dust from that courtyard and he keeps it, he ties it in his cloth, in his upper cloth. And wherever he travels, he takes that dust with him so that he can keep taking that dust on his head. Again establishing that how the dust of the lotus feet of your Guru Maharaj is the most important thing in this world. So following in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example, all the other devotees also started doing this. Everybody started visiting Kumarhatta and everybody started taking dust from that place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had originally taken dust. And because of so many devotees taking dust, there was a pond which actually got created over there. So today also if we visit Kumarhatta, that place is famous as known as Chaitanya Doha. Doha in Bengali means pond. So a pond got created because so many devotees took the dust of the birthplace of Ishwarapuri, which was Kumarhatta. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually went to Jagannath Puri. We know how he took sannyas and then he went to Jagannath Puri. On the instructions of his mother, he did not go to Vrindavan, but he decided he will serve the Lord in Jagannath Puri. But by that time, Ishwarapuri had already wound up his pastimes from this world. But before winding up his pastimes, he gives instructions to two of his disciples, his dear disciples, and their names were Govinda and Kashishwar Brahmachari. So he tells them that y'all go to Jagannath Puri and y'all serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu over there. Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when these devotees arrive, they are his god brothers, so he did not want to accept any service from them. But both Govinda and Kashishwar Brahmachari insist that no, these are the orders of our Guru Maharaj. Our reverential Guru Ishwarapuri has instructed us to always engage in your service in Jagannath Puri. So very reluctantly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allows these people to serve them. So what made Ishwarapuri, why Ishwarapuri was selected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be his guru? What made him so special? And that is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and by our senior acharyas. So it is described that Ishwarapuri was chosen by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of the devotion which Ishwarapuri had for his own Guru Maharaj, Madhavendra Puri. So when Madhavendra Puri was about to leave this world, he was winding up his pastimes in this world. And when he was winding up his pastimes in this world, he had completely gone into Smaranam of Krishna. And because of that internal meditation on Krishna and Smaranam of Krishna, he had lost consciousness of the outside world. So day in and day out, Madhavendra Puri would just cry and cry and cry in separation of Krishna. And he would cry out, where is Krishna, where is Radha, where is Lalita, where is Vishakha? In separation from these, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he would cry out. And two of his disciples were present there to serve him. One disciple was Ramachandra Puri and the other disciple was Ishwarapuri. So Ramachandra Puri could not understand the mood of his Guru Maharaj. When he saw his Guru Maharaj crying like this in ecstasy, in separation from Krishna, he thought that he should pacify his Guru Maharaj. So he quotes verses from the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Brahma Bhuta Pasana Prasanna Atmana Sochati Na Kangshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu. He starts quoting those verses from the Bhagavad Gita. So he says, why are you lamenting Guru Maharaj? You know, a person who is Brahma Bhuta, who is on the Brahman platform, should not cry or lament for somebody. And when Madhavendra Puri heard these words from Ramachandra Puri, because it was a ras abhas that was happening. Madhavendra Puri was in complete ecstasy in separation from Krishna, and Ramachandra Puri is talking to him about Brahman platform and how not to lament. So So Ramachandrapuri did not recognize the mood of his guru, that his guru is not lamenting for something material, he is not crying for something material. So instead of helping his guru's mood by telling him Krishna Katha or narrating pastimes or songs about Lord Krishna, he actually tried to put a hindrance in his guru's mood. And Madhavendra Puri got very upset and he drives Ramachandra Puri out from there. And he says, "You rascal, you go away from here. You are not realizing what I am experiencing and you are trying to give me some lecture on how I should not lament and cry. So you go away from there." And because of this offense which Ramachandra Puri does, he actually gets into the mentality of fault finding. And again, throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita, his pastimes are described. How because of him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to reduce his eating. Because he used to always call devotees, force them to eat. And when the devotees would eat, just out of respect for Ramachandra Puri, he would then say, "See, what sort of devotee you are? How much you are eating? You don't have control over your tongue?" He would only force and then he would only criticize. But this criticizing mentality and this fault-finding mentality came in him because of this offense that he had done to his guru. On the other hand, Ishwara Puri was also present over there. And he, understanding the mood of his Guru Maharaj, he would very lovingly recite the Bhagavatam to his Guru Maharaj. Very lovingly he would recite the 10th canto. And he would sing songs which were composed by great acharyas. He would sing all these songs just to enhance that mood of his Guru Maharaj, the mood of separation which his Guru Maharaj was in. And Madhavendra Puri was so pleased with Ishwara Puri's service. So not only in this way Ishwara Puri was serving the mood of his Guru Maharaj, but he was also rendering very physical menial services to his Guru Maharaj. Because by that time, Madhavendra Puri had become so old, he was completely incapacitated. He did not have any control over his nature's calls. And plus he had lost external consciousness as well because he was in internal meditation on Krishna. So his nature's calls he would answer on the bed only, which he was lying. But Ishwara Puri for months and months and months very lovingly served Madhavendra Puri's physical needs as well. Very lovingly he would clean the stool and urine of his Guru Maharaj, put on fresh clothes for him, give him a bath. So every little physical need of Madhavendra Puri was also attended to by Ishwara Puri. And why did Madhavendra Puri give this service to Ishwara Puri? So it is described that Ishwara Puri recognized that more important than the service to Krishna himself is service to Guru. But also important is service to the disciples of his Guru or to his God brothers. So not only Ishwara Puri had this mood of rendering menial service to his Guru, but he also had the right mood of rendering service to all his God brothers. And throughout his life, he had spent time rendering just services to all his God brothers and all other Vaishnavas. And seeing this serving mood of Ishwara Puri, Madhavendra Puri allowed him to serve him during his last days. And he gave him this great opportunity to render not only physical service but also assist him in his mood of separation from Krishna before he leaves this world. So that is why Ishwara Puri was chosen by Madhavendra Puri. And seeing this mood which Ishwara Puri had for his Guru and for the other Vaishnavas and his God brothers, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually chose Ishwara Puri to become his Guru. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach us the sum and substance of bhakti, which is Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Das Das Dasanu Das. And he saw that his Guru Maharaj, Ishwara Puri, was a living example of that, of how to be always servant of the servant of the servant of all Vaishnavas, and in that way serve your Guru, and in that way serve Krishna. So he saw that Ishwara Puri was an emblem of this, and that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself had come to propagate. And that is why he actually chose Ishwara Puri to become his Guru Maharaj. So these are some of the pastimes about Ishwara Puri. I'm sure there must be many more, but time is also up. So we'll stop our class over here, and if there's any comments, questions or corrections.
Of Krishna because there is question arises, if Krishna is speaking to the Narayana Prabhupada, how could there be grammatical correction errors? That's the first question. And the second question is related to that is, if there are grammatical corrections, how come our editing department keeps editing these books over and over and over again, thousands and thousands of corrections? Maybe you can enlighten us and light on it.
Nice question. I will try to give my understanding of this, Prabhuji, but there might be some other senior devotees who might want to add something. So the question is that when we are saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that how can there be any fault in the scriptures that you have written? So there are two aspects. There is tattva and then there is grammar. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was more referring to the tattva that is being written in these manuscripts. So because Krishna is himself dictating, there is no fault in the tattva or there is no fault in the philosophy that is being presented. Because sometimes we find when, you know, people in India, even politicians write their purports on Bhagavad Gita. We've seen that there are many politicians who have written about Bhagavad Gita. Now, politicians should stick to politics. Maybe they can write books on politics. For example, you know, if a famous cricketer, let's say Sachin Tendulkar, he sits and writes on the Bhagavad Gita, what is that going to have? What you know, philosophical standing that Bhagavad Gita is going to have? He can write on cricket and people will buy books on cricket because he is expert in that field. But, you know, so what we are talking about is that these people, they are not following the Guru Parampara. They are not coming in the disciplic succession. So whatever they are going to write is going to be, Manorathena Dhavato Sati Bhai. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam that a person who is not surrendered to the Supreme Lord is just writing, Manorathena. He is riding on his own mental chariot. So he has no control over his senses and he is just following the speculations of his mind. So these politicians who write the Bhagavad Gita will fall under that category. But what we are talking about is pure devotees who have come in the disciplic succession, who have studied scriptures of their predecessors very scrutinizingly. And then in the mood of surrender, they are also writing a manuscript. So when such people or such devotees, exalted personalities, sit down to write the manuscript, then Krishna will come and dictate to them. And when we say Krishna dictates, that means there will be nothing wrong in the tattva or the philosophy that they are presenting. Now, if we read the books by these politicians, I'm sure there will be so many errors even in the tattva. And we see, in fact, you know, many people say, you know, all these bogus personalities who write commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita, they say that, oh, there was nothing like the Pandavas, there are five senses. You know, so many bogus things we hear about that. And Krishna is just someone who is a mythological, historical figure or something like that. So, or there is no Krishna only. The person who is speaking is the person who is you inside you. You know, there's lots of bogus things we hear. So the whole philosophy is wrong in that particular case. But here we are talking that when Krishna dictates, there will be definitely no faults in the tattva at all. So how can Chaitanya Mahaprabhu correct anything in that particular manuscript when it has been dictated by Krishna himself through the pure mouths of Ishwarapuri who is coming in the disciplic succession? And when we come to then, you know, the material, on a material level, when we come to the grammar part of whatever has been written. So there is no fault in the tattva. But Krishna is ultimately manifesting it through a person who is his empowered representative, who has come in this material world. And like Srila Prabhupada was attempting to write in English, which was not his main language. Now, if Prabhupada has written it in Bengali, maybe there would not have been any mistakes or something like that. But Prabhupada chose to write these books in English. So we have to understand that Prabhupada was trying to reach out to the general mass of people, the general populace, the wide population of the West especially. And realizing that, yes, he has to reach out to this population who will not be having that philosophical understanding that, oh, this is tattva, there is no mistake in that, it has been dictated by Krishna. So even if there are some grammatical errors, it's fine, we should overlook them and look for the tattva. General people are not going to realize that, and that is why, answering your second question, we have so many editors who then, you know, go through it to just overcome any little errors that might have been there in English or making, you know, language more suitable to suit these audiences so that it is more acceptable to the general populace. So those are the two things. The tattva is perfect, but if there are any grammatical errors, then they have to be corrected because we have to reach out to the masses. They may not understand to look beyond these grammatical errors and just look at the tattva.
Thank you.
That is my understanding. If anybody wants to add something. Yes,
please. The last time, I think it's Sri where this, the Brahman was crying at the Bhagavad-gita. All the other Brahmins were laughing at him because he didn't know Sanskrit, and you read well, he had the cups up down and everything. And they said, oh, you're reading very nicely today, blah, 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 blah. And then actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, actually, you're the one that actually knows Bhagavad-gita. He said, well, why are you crying? He said, I just think of Krishna being a servant of his devotees, you know, being his wife, basically. So you actually understand Bhagavad Gita. So, very, very nice explanation. Exactly what I was thinking, your explanation is perfect. For Krishna, he accepts it that it's perfect, but the external is, it's all the fault-finding people of this world, then they need to have a perfect, so they can respect it. So, and secondly, Srila Prabhupada himself liked his devotees, so that much we can accept.
Yeah.
Prabhupada liked to have his devotees from my Guru in 1967, you know, 66 maybe, I don't know, right from the beginning, Srila Prabhupada himself liked that his devotees would edit his book and make it all nice so that other people would, you know, respect the externals and therefore be able to enter into the actual meaning.
Yes, very nice. Thank you, Prabhuji. And it gives us a chance to serve Srila Prabhupada. If there was no editing, we wouldn't have service. Like the devotees who are editors wouldn't have that service to serve Srila Prabhupada. Yes,
I just want to mention that His Grace Venu Gopal Prabhu from Yugovardhan left his body last night, 2 weeks, suffering from cancer. And just similarly, perhaps pretty glorified. Venu Gopal is in charge of the cows at Yugovardhan, and he rendered so much service to devoted and disciples to Yugovardhan. Please listen to this great hymn. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Please, if you could glorify.
Venu Gopal, was that emblem of, you know, not having any enemies, you know. He just had no enemy. Everyone just loved him because he was just, his heart was just so, he didn't judge others, and he was very, he served the cows, like, so much pressure. He, you know, I'm not an expert on speaking of him. I've known him, I guess, since I've been 20-something years ago. But he just, very humbly did his service. He was very just friendly with all the devotees. Simply dedicated his life for serving Krishna. Mind you, when he just said he was suffering for 2 weeks of cancer, something in my head was like, he wasn't suffering. I've never seen, I mean, you know, you read about it, but when you see it, someone is just so happy. You know, you go and see him and his body's wasting away. They just want to give you a big hug. So nice to see, you know, nothing had changed, but he was just even more just free from anything in this world. He showed us how to ask over, really. We're all very much touched. The whole community, you know. But, I mean, he was the person who would always be there at festivals, you know, greeting everybody, introducing the speaker, doing the bhajan. You know, he was that person in our community. So we were very much, very. It's very surreal to think of that community around him. But he really showed the way, just how to, you know, just live a life. Like you said, just serve the devotees. Not make any offense, you know, this is the thing about, what is it then? You can't lose any offense when there is path, except if you offend it, find fault in your devotees. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? You know, this fault-finding mentality. Only that you can go backwards, and I think Venu Gopal was just the emblem of that. He just, you know, he didn't think offensively, had no difficulty with any devotees, and therefore we saw at the end it was so easy for him to just ask them. They said, I've seen pictures of Nigavada last night when he left, there was this golden sunset, there was this huge rainbows. And everybody was saying, well, what happened? Even the devotees that didn't know, they were like, what happened today? They didn't know he left his book. It was just like golden effulgence in the whole sky,
So auspicious. Yes.
So auspicious. His wife said that the doors were just wide open, like it just felt the doors to Vrindavan just open. Very dear disciples, and you can see in the videos here in Melbourne Temple, all those videos you see from Srila Prabhupada, that visit maybe 73, 74, all the devotees are very young. You see Vanny Gopal sitting there, but he's like 17, he's very young for much longer. So, this place, Vanny Gopal.
Thank you, Prabhupada. You had a question, I agree?
Did Ishwara Puri wanted to send Madhav in the Puri, or did Madhav in the Puri told Ishwara Puri to serve him?
Both.
What is it?
Did Ishwara Puri wanted to serve Madhavendra Puri, or did Madhavendra Puri want Ishwara Puri to serve him? It was both. It was a reciprocal relationship between the guru and the disciple. So the disciple always wants to serve his guru, and the guru chose that disciple because he was very nicely serving his godbrothers and other Vaishnavas. So that's why Madhavendra Puri chose him, but Ishwara Puri also wanted to serve his guru. So both are true. So just day before in our children's class, we were telling this pastime. I agree, you heard the pastime?
What is it?
Why Jagannath wears an elephant mask after Snan Yatra. So this is Lord Jagannath again showing his love to his devotees. There was one devotee, a great devotee of Lord Ganesha. You know who is Lord Ganesha? He's one of the demigods who has an elephant head. So he was a great devotee of Lord Ganesha. And he could think of nobody else except Ganesha. He was so devoted to him. And one day when some of his friends were coming for the Rath Yatra, so they brought him also to Jagannath Puri. And they said, come. And he didn't want to go. He said, no, I don't want to worship anybody else. I just want to worship Ganesha. So I don't want to come to Jagannath Puri. But some of his friends forced him, no, you come with us. You'll really like the festival. It's a nice chariot pulling festival. So they brought him, and when he came there and he saw Lord Jagannath on the chariot, he felt attracted because Jagannath is so merciful. But you know, he started missing his Lord Ganesha, because his worshipable Lord was Ganesha. So then he turned his back and he thought, no, I must go back. I'm missing Ganesha. I'll go back to my place so I can worship him. And he started walking back away from the chariot. And then, you know, Lord Jagannath came to him in his mind. And he said that, I am non-different than your Lord Ganesha. Just turn around once and look at me. Why are you turning your back on me and going away? So this person again turned back, and then this time when he turned back, he saw that Jagannath and Baldev had those, you know, elephant head on them. So he could realize that Jagannath is actually Lord Ganesha. Lord Ganesha is in Jagannath, because Jagannath, Lord Krishna, is the source of all the demigods, isn't it? So Lord Ganesha is in Jagannath, and there is no need to separately worship Lord Ganesha. That is the message that he got at that time. That, and that is why we put this elephant mask on Jagannath and Baldev after Snan Yatra. Okay? We'll stop here. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.